Good evening and welcome to the June 13th, 2007 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District. Brings us to item number three, public comment. Any member of the public may address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board. The board will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the board cannot act on any item that's not on the agenda. Would anyone like to address the board at this time? Okay. Hearing none at the moment. I would like to move at this time to address item 8B, which is a presentation from Tom Zander of Wallace Associates concerning an interagency agreement in regard to compliance with California Regional Water Quality Control Board Waste Discharge Requirements Order number R3-2004-062, the Fats, Oils, and Grease Regulation, commonly called FOG, I guess. Tom, thank you for coming.
Mr. President, I'm going to recuse myself on this item. I've had a recent business dealing with one of the people that would be affected by this.
Okay, thank you, Vern.
Thank you, President Hill, members of the board. Maybe a good place to begin is with a little bit of history. Back in 2004, the district, as well as the other parent agency of the South San Francisco County Sanitation District, received a operating permit from the Water Board that in part regulates discharges into the system, that component being fats, oils, and grease. And what we're here tonight to present to you is that implementation of that program. The schedule that the board put forth, the Water Board put forth, was implementation by July 1 of 2007. So what I'd like to do is walk through the program tonight. It's a program that is shared with the other parent agencies, specifically Grover, as well as Arroyo Grande. So where to begin? The big push behind this is to minimize spills. I mean, the benefit to residents, business owners, the Water Board, and the district is a reduction in spills due to blockages due to fats, oils, and grease building up in the sewer. And this is a proactive method to approach what we see as one of the larger contributors of fats, oils, and grease, restaurants. It's a two-phase program, first phase being restaurants, the second phase being public outreach to community members, residents and such that may also be depositing a fair amount of grease. And I know, Phil, you know, in your travels through the district, you can see where some of the grease blockages are, again, due to people depositing or flushing down grease. So, again, first phase would be restaurants, which is what I'll present tonight, and then future would be inside of the sewer system. It's less time and effort that the maintenance crews have to go out and clean sewers because there's buildups of grease, oil, and fat. So by preventing it from getting in the system is a reduction in cost as far as taking it out. There's also a reduction in treatment costs at the plant. Again, whatever you put in, you've got to take back out as we treat that water at the plant. So there's a lot of benefits to this program. And also, by doing inspections of the food service establishments, the intent also is to help from a hygiene standpoint. If they're properly using their facilities, they're managing them, less chance of problems within the facility. So there's a multi-component process here. And I think one thing that many people overlook is a lot of the community believes that, well, the health department oversees my grease trap. Conversely, a lot of districts feel, well, that health department, there's this mix of, there's this dead zone where one entity believes the other is inspecting it, and what happens is neither inspects it. So this, again, is a method by the Water Board to ensure that they're getting inspected by putting it in our permit. Because many believe it's a health department responsibility, the health department believes it's district responsibility, so it sort of falls through the cracks. The way that this program would work is the district has identified about 16 candidates for implementation for permits based on their experience, based on some background of the district, and I believe you have that list as part of your package. There was a number, I think it was six or seven, that were excluded from that initially. The program would be as such. We would go out and do an initial inspection, determine if they should be in the program or if they should be exempt from the program. And then there's a yearly inspection or even more frequently depending on how the conditions persist. You know, if it's a chronic problem, there's a re-inspection. There's an initial application fee of $100 for the establishment. Then there's an annual fee of $100 that's borne by the establishment. And then if we have to keep coming back, every time we come back, there's an $80 cost. The overall cost of managing the program is just under $6,000. Now, if you start doing the math with 16 potential applicants, and there may be more, there may be less, as an initial, was that $3,200 outlay first year, so the net cost to the district would be on the order of $2,500 to $2,800. That could be offset if you prevent one spill or two spills. You know, the man service and the man hours associated with those response times, as well as any fines, could offset that. There's been some studies done throughout California where they've seen as a reduction, as an implementation of a FAR program, they've seen a reduction in overflows and spills. The restaurant owner in the proper use and disposal of that as well. You know, there's four haulers that will take the grease from you, some at no cost. Again, education of the food service establishment so they know how to A, operate and maintain their equipment, and B, how to dispose of fat, soil, and grease and not just bypass it into the sewer system. So I think there's, again, there's a large public outreach education component to this. That's our program in summary. May I answer any questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Barbara.
Tom, I do not see the Central Coast Senior Center on here.
Okay.
And it should be. They
okay.
have grease traps.
Okay. Well, I'm looking over that.
A 1580 Railroad.
Okay. Thank you. If there's any others that you see, if you could let me know either or let Phil know, that would be very helpful for us.
Tom, the produce companies, do you get much clean out from those?
Typically not. We've got a discussion just previously. There's also a pre-treatment program that the Sanitation District runs separate from this. It's sort of a source control program that we have prohibitions, as does the district, as to what you can discharge in the sewer. And you know, the hospital is an example that we have a program with. Walmart, we're there because they have photo processing. So if we feel that someone is generating waste that are incompatible with the plant, we'll enroll them in a pretreatment program. I wasn't aware of the vegetable exchange of having an issue, but I think it might be worthwhile.
Not the vegetable exchange, but the produce. We have several produce companies here in mm-hmm. Oceano. And in the whole group there, are they involved?
Not at this point.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of programs do you have? I mean, you were talking Walgreens, and mm-hmm. what kind of treatment is that?
What we do, for example, California Fine Wire is an example, where during their process they slough off metals. So rather than them discharging directly into the sanitation district's collection system, they have a closed loop treatment system. So any water that they generate as part of their manufacturing process stays within their gates, and then they haul that water off and is treated elsewhere as potentially hazardous waste or whatever definition it has. All we receive from them is basically sanitary water from restrooms and a kitchen sink. So it depends on the constituents, and it depends on the volume. There's a number of different parameters, temperature, constituent, and what we'll do is we'll work with them to regulate to make sure that they're not discharging. And we run samples. We'll spot check them. They also have to run yearly samples and provide us with that data. The third way is when I was a kid, we had a can. Side of the sink, and you pour the hot grease in the can, and you throw the can in the trash. That's probably the preferred method.
Mm-hmm.
That way it ends up in the landfill.
Landfill, yeah. Right.
For larger generators, San Luis Tallow and others will take that, and they'll render it and use it for other commercial uses. But for a household, it's not enough quantity. For most households, I guess, not enough quantity to elicit a hauler.
So the best thing that people who are watching could do would be to collect it locally in a can or some kind of container and put it in the trash.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a question. Haven't most restaurants been recycling their grease and fats and oils for a long time, or is this, you know?
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
Some have, some haven't. It just really depends. It depends. It's almost a case-by-case basis. We are aware of some restaurants that don't have grease traps.
Oh, okay.
That, you know, it's just all going through.
Will you retrofit those?
They would be required to, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I thought they were using that grease to use it for in place of gasoline.
Biodiesel or something.
Yeah, there's a number of side benefits for that grease. I mean, we're looking at a grease-to-gas process at our plant here where we could take that grease, put it in our digester, and actually would generate gas that we would burn. We're looking at a cogen facility at the plant here.
Oh.
We would actually make, you know, electrical power out of that. So that there's a lot of new technologies coming out that take that grease, either turning it into biodiesel or other fuel sources, Or, you know, example, other plants similar to ours are taking that grease and they're making gas and then turning that into, you know, a renewable energy source.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we could actually have a gas station over the sanitation district in the next 20 years?
Well, we won't be...
We probably
won't be getting into the biodiesel business, but the gas that we would generate would lower our electrical costs because we would use that gas to power turbines that make electricity that would reduce our energy consumption at the plant.
And you already use your methane?
Yes, we do.
Gas. It's converted.
Well, right now it's flared. Well, we do two things with it. We heat the digester with it. We have to keep our digester warm. So we use the generated gas off the digester through a boiler that heats the water that is circulated to keep the digester, and any excess is flared. But the intent is to remove all, to take all of that and turn it into power.
We're very efficient.
Thank you.
I'd like to see this happen because I don't want to see any more Arroyo Grande, like Arroyo Grande Creek spills and things like that.
With respect to compliance with this new order, and that would be the proposed action for the board tonight.
So moved.
And I would second that.
Okay. Moved by Director Mann, seconded by Director Dean, that we adopt the proposed agreement. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl? Out. President Hill?
Yes.
Just a question for staff, Tom, if you could, too, just on procedural. You indicated the revenue would offset the cost, so I presume that in the end what we're going to get is some sort of billing that reflects the number of inspections, the number of fees, the amounts, and then we would write you a check for the difference between that and what the cost was?
The way we've done it historically with the district is we're reimbursed by the parent agency for our costs. So we would... The collection of the permit fees would be by Oceano, OCSD, and then what we would do is we would charge our time, and then internally you would offset that for ideally a zero gain or a zero loss.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom. Okay, continuing with the normal order then, item four is board member items for discussion. We'll wait till Director Dahl gets back. Discussion items. Vern, do you have any?
Nothing at this time.
Pam?
Just the reminder about the tire collection days, which is this Saturday, and it's up to 9 tires you can take and get rid of. It's free, and it's at the closest one. It is Saturday at New Pomo High School on 525 North Thompson Avenue. So that's tire collection days, and if you have any of those around, they are hard to get rid of. They will take 9 from each person.
And there's no charge for that, as I understand.
It is free.
Do you have the times?
It starts at 9 a.m. and goes to 4 p.m. at New Pomo High School.
Coordinated that with the agency because we would have no way of knowing how many tires people brought in.
That is true.
Yeah, so it probably is a good thought for maybe some sort of future thing, but right now I think we're just going to have to count on the citizens to load up their 9 tires and take a drive.
Mm-hmm. I've not seen this before, this tire collection days before. I'm hoping they keep doing it every year.
I think this is the first year.
Okay.
Well, I think the reason they're doing it is because it was funded by a grant, because when they get those tires up there, they are going to have to pay $1.50 per tire when it goes to the tire waste place.
In some cases, they use old tires for, again, fuel for electric generation and so forth. So hopefully
they'll
make
some
positive use of it. Yeah.
They're also popular for playground softening under swings and things of that nature.
And they do chop them up and put them in paving for roads. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of uses for those.
All right. So that was, what day was that again?
It's Saturday, this coming Saturday.
Saturday from 9 to 4 at Napomo High School.
9 tires, that's a lot to to get rid of. That's good.
Okay, Bill, anything else?
That's it.
I have nothing at this time. Brings us to item 5, review and approval of the minutes from May 23rd. Any comment or questions from the board? Any comment from the public on the minutes? Okay. Hearing none.
There's a couple of corrections over here.
Okay.
On page 5, 10C, number 1, we forgot to get in the minutes that the new airport land use plan for Oceano Airport was adopted. And then page 6, under item 10C, number 2, the new member's name at the Oceano Advisory Council is Shane Hernandez, not Sean. That's all I have.
Then I move that we approve the minutes with the corrections.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes with corrections. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Moving on to reports, Commander Basti's not with us this evening, so that brings us down to the staff reports. Any comment or questions from the board on the staff reports?
I had a question on about the meter readings for Arroyo Grande. It says all meter readings were sent to Arroyo Grande. Was that just for the area that we service, or how does that work?
Okay, Tierra and Lancaster, we bill, but Russ Court and Fall Place are the two that are actually billed by Roy Grandy. He's looking at me strangely, so one of us is not remembering correctly.
We have the sewers at Russ Court and Fall Place.
Okay.
And we have the water in the other streets you mentioned.
Which reading is it that we need to send each time to Roy Grandy? Canyon Crest?
The Christie family?
Mm-hmm. It is subdivision outside of our city limits.
So we'll research it and I'll answer the question in the weekly
report.
That's
what I'm thinking it is.
Okay. Yeah, we'll give you a good answer in the weekly report.
That's fine. I mean, it's an off-the-wall question.
As long as we get money from them, we're happy.
It makes things complicated when you serve water in another agency and through another agency and outside
and
another agency and
this
wheeling stuff.
The other
is,
city
and that's why we're not going to do that anymore.
No,
right?
We're
that's
not.
True.
We're not going to do that anymore.
Keep our
I'm not sure why you did some in the past, but I guess it probably wasn't.
Paul Place was long before my.
I think they all were long before anybody that's currently here's time. But it makes it complicated for us. At the staff level.
Yeah.
But we do it, we collect every penny, and everything's accounted for. And we'll give you a good answer in the Friday report.
Well, it would be the ones we wheel the water for, which would be Canyon Crest was one.
Unless they bill the sewer on some of the streets that we provide.
Oh, the sewer separate, yeah.
And it depends on if their sewer rates are based on consumption.
It's complex.
It's complicated.
Any other questions, comments?
We have an answer. It's just not tonight.
Okay, I had a couple questions regarding the GENIUS report. time working on the community center lease, getting documents? Was that?
We had a couple of requests for copies of the district's lease agreement with OCCI.
Okay. So it was basically a response to questions from the public.
Right. They had a written request for copies.
Good. Okay. Thank you. And I want to highlight one thing on the Water Department report also. There's a new regulation requiring Stage 2 disinfectants and disinfection byproducts rule plan. Gee, easy for me to say. And Phil, as I understand it, developed that plan and got it approved in-house without significant additional costs that might have been might have come across there. So we appreciate your good work on that. Thank you very much.
Sheriff just walked in.
Okay. Is there any public comment on the district reports? Okay. Hearing none, then, can we receive these in file, please? And I see that we do have a representative from the Sheriff's Department, absent Commander Basti. Would you like to come on up?
Davidson, Deputy with the Sheriff's Office.
Welcome.
Could I hear your name again, sir?
Darren Davidson.
Thank you.
D-A-R-R-E-N, D-A-V-I-D-S-Y.
Sure. How's that?
Perfect.
Just four things I wanted to touch on. One, residential burglaries are on the rise again. Had a commercial burglary on, I believe it was Pier Avenue. A suspect was arrested. He was found inside the location. This last week, they found a homemade explosive device. It was small, not much more than a homemade firecracker. Found it at Oceanum Elementary. Just again, we want to encourage people to lock their cars and don't leave valuables in them. That's kind of vehicle burglaries and thefts from vehicles are on the rise again. School's out for summer. And we get a lot of reports are forgot to lock their car and they left suitcase or a camera or something in plain sight in the car, and that's what happens. That's really about all we have to report this week.
Okay, we have a lot of tourists in the area, of course,
this time of
year also. So
yeah, we do. There was also a pretty serious vandalism on Coolidge. A tourist had his car parked on Coolidge, and it got vandalized and partially stripped during the night. I believe it was last night, sometime early morning.
Okay. There have been a number of vehicles that seem to be parked, like trailers and things, parked probably near the beach, the streets near the beach, with, I don't know whether they're camping or what, but that would you guys enforce that, or would the Highway Patrol?
Yes, we enforce that.
Okay, so we should notify you when we see things
like
that.
We get calls quite often.
It seems like the vehicles that are parked down there are the 1959, 1960 era motorhome and collection of those. They're overnight. Are the people pretty much sleeping in them? Do you find them sleeping in them?
Yeah, I believe quite a few of them do sleep in them.
What's the procedure for that?
We write them citations.
Just write them citations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not an arrestable offense. It's just citable.
Yeah. Is there signs posted down there, no overnight camping? Or
it's posted all over town.
Okay, so that is there.
Yeah, they're well aware. Several of the people have been cited more than once. It's just a matter of time.
Does the fine go up after?
You know what, I'm not sure, but I believe it does.
And is Coolidge down around the beach?
Coolidge is right off of Pacific or Highway 1. I believe it's the last road before
Grover Beach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, before the ranger station.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Any other questions? Comment or questions from the public? Okay. Thank you very much for coming and making the report.
Thank you all.
Moving to item 7, fire items. Weed abatement. This is an opportunity for public protest hearing. Receipt of public comment on our weed abatement program. Is there anyone who would like to make a comment on the weed abatement program? I'll ask three times. Is there anyone who'd like to make a comment on the weed abatement program? Anyone who'd like to make a comment on the weed abatement program? Hearing none, there's been no comments on the weed abatement program. So we will move to item 7B, consideration of adoption of the fire department handbook. And I'll ask the general manager to introduce this item.
Just one quick question on the last item, if you don't mind. We had a written protest?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, what you have before you is a document that represents a lot of work, rework, more work, rework, and more work. And tonight we may do a little bit of rework, just a couple of minor corrections. Mike, Chief Mike has spent a lot of hours putting this together, culling different things, and so I will give him the honor of opening the presentation for you and let you know that he and I have put this thing together along with review by Alex and review by front office staff to where it is as good as us humans can get it, I think. It represents a fairly good piece of work. Mike?
Good evening. To start off by saying perfection takes a long time, and we have been working on this pretty diligently, so if you have any questions or comments.
Are we still waiting for the drug section?
Yes. I was getting ready to, once Mike introduced it, I was getting ready to say that there are a couple of things that I would like to go through here and point out where we need to make a couple of changes on words. Alex found one this afternoon when he reviewed the last version of it that he would suggest we make a change to. The document represents the pared-down version with the listing at the end of the manual identifying 7 or 8 different documents that are as attachments but are incorporated herein. All of the documents, with the exception of the drug policy, are documents that your body has already previously approved in past reviews. So we didn't provide a copy of those because it's quite large, and unless we wanted to change something, we just didn't bring those to you. The one that is not on that list is the drug policy, because we have about 2 or 3 different drug policies in existence, and it's one of those things where documents got done and done and done and nothing was rescinded, and so we're trying to put together another one. And I had hopes of getting that done by tonight. Those hopes vanished in a whirl of other activities, and so that did not get here. And so what I would propose you do is, if you feel comfortable after we make these little ticky-tack changes, to go ahead and consider the adoption of this subject to the final adoption of the drug policy at your next board meeting, or you can hold this and adopt it all together. So with that, I'd like to just point out a couple of little things that we want to change in terms of words, and then I don't think that'll take more than 5 minutes to get through the process. The one thing we want to add, if you have the document in front of you in section 100.1.1, add the town of Halcyon in that line. Page 1.
I had a question.
Page 1 of chapter AA.
I had a question on that also. What about the beach response?
That's addressed in another area.
I saw it in there.
Yeah.
So you don't want to point to it. Okay.
Because that is not our formal responsibility. We're doing that to
arrangement. It's under contract. It's a contract for 7 years.
Yeah.
7 year contract.
Isn't it through mutual aid? We don't have a separate contract with the state.
We have a separate formal agreement with the state and the other agencies, and that's called out at the appropriate part in there.
It was.
Section 5 is where we talk about the drug-free workplace policy to be adopted. On page 35, and this will show you how ticky-tacky I did get as we went through this process. One of the changes that was supposed to be made and didn't in section 300.8.3, I wanted to add in there down where we talk about it, the medical run report shall contain the following location, name and address, name of the individual, and possible cause of death, because we're not licensed to actually determine cause of death, but we can identify a possible cause of death. So just add the word possible there. And under page 47, and I think this is the section where we had some changes, and I'm not sure whether Mike and I drew a blank on this or forgot it or what, but we never did quite get there. And my memory will not tell me how it happened, but I still had them noted, and so I want to suggest them to you, and I think we can go through them rather fast. Section 31, 300.31, it talks about a membership review board. We don't have members of the fire department anymore. We have employees. And some of this language that's in here reflects members, and I'm suggesting we change all of those members to employees because they're not part of a club or an association like the fire department used to be. They are their employees. And I don't think we have a membership review board in place anywhere. Yes, ma'am.
Are all of the firefighters considered employees?
Probably the chaplain is not. The chaplain is a volunteer.
No, I'm thinking about the reserves.
Yes, they're considered employees.
Okay.
We pay them.
Okay.
We direct them.
Okay.
And they're part-time, but they're employees.
Okay. And the chaplain is not considered in there and therefore would not be considered.
He is paid, so he is an employee too.
Okay. So when you say employee, it does refer to him too on this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Section 48, the paragraph, page 48, the paragraph at the top. There's some reason in this document there's two or three paragraphs that are kind of out of character, out of place in a handbook, and are more pontification than policy. So I'd suggest that whole paragraph be removed, where it says it takes all kinds of people to make up the world, and I mean it's just out of character for this
document. Page 48.
It's more like a mission statement.
I have a picky word.
Uh-huh.
And maybe you already caught it on section 300.33.
Imminent?
No, it's the first sentence that says certain situations that compromise a special incident should be comprise.
Yes, thank you. That we didn't catch. Comprise.
What
page?
First
what
paragraph, page? Same page 48 under section 333.
Very first line.
First line.
It's comprise, not compromise. So it's just a spelling error. And I have another spelling error, unless I don't know how to spell this word, which is the one where we talk about the flood warning or Lopez dam failure. Mm-hmm. Imminent is not spelled with an I. And page 51, 300.35.3. Once again, for some reason, we become missionaries. Never let it be forgotten that every person is entitled to receive members' wholehearted courtesy. It's just, once again, out of character in the document. And probably is a nice thing to say and do.
So your suggestion is remove it?
Just remove it, yeah.
Okay, which was the paragraph again? How does it start out?
All members of the department. It's page 51, the first full paragraph from the top, and the middle sentence.
Okay. Yeah. Never let it be. The all members of the department should stay in there. It's never let it be forgotten. That's where the deletion should start, and everything after that in that paragraph. Just for some reason, those little things got in there, and I'm not sure why. No, we're going to remove everywhere it says members and change it to employees. And to the last one that I have, and then Alex has one, which is 300.37.1. That section are talking about the leave of absence. And it said, should the original absence expire without contact from the absentee, they will be considered to have resigned, is what I would edit that to say, as opposed to what it says now. In other words, if an employee is on leave of absence and he doesn't show up and doesn't show up and doesn't show up, the policy says they've resigned. So we have to have some way. And Alex, if you would go ahead and make your correction on number of days.
Could you give me the numbers on that?
Yes. The last one is on page 54, and it's 300.37.1. And it's the last sentence, and it says, should the original absence expire without contact from the absentee, they will be considered to have resigned.
Well, when these corrections get made, you can just give us those few pages, a new copy, and we can just insert it, right?
Sure.
Rather than go to the
reprint it.
Trouble of giving us a whole nother
right.
book.
Right.
What I had was an inconsistency which just needs to be reconciled at the management level. If you go to page 5, section 100.9 and section 100.9.2, in both of those sections, they talk about an obligation to report certain kinds of medical conditions within 24 hours. If you then flip to page 10, section 100.11.1, they talk about those medical conditions having to be reported within 48 hours. Mm-hmm. Can be one or the other, just need to make a decision.
24 works. 24 works for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about particular conditions of people that they run into?
No, I believe the reference here is to
the
employee.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
If they're having a medical problem in certain circumstances, they have to notify us about it so we don't send somebody out that's ill or injured.
Okay, so are those any medical conditions or medical conditions that affect their job? Is that in there?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes.
The ones that are listed in section 9.
Yeah. It makes reference to certain types of medical
okay.
conditions.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think this document with these minor corrections, and those were minor, is reflective of a document that will represent the district and the fire personnel very well. And you shouldn't have to make too many major changes to it for a week or two.
The reference to the forthcoming drug policy being Appendix G, the other presumably lettered appendices are the ones you referred to.
Those other lettered appendices have all been previously approved by your board in some form and at some time. Mm-hmm. And they're also what makes this book about a third of what it would normally have been otherwise. Try to write everything out in there.
I have to give you kudos for this. This is a big thing. So for Chief Mike, the fire department, the fire committee, Arnie, this is a huge undertaking, and I'm so glad to have this together, finally. Thank you. And I think we should approve it tonight with those kinds of, with the corrections and with the final approval of the drug policy. So that would be my motion.
Is there a reason that we need to approve it tonight as opposed to having not?
No, other than the fact that it has been lingering and lingering and lingering, and I would like to get it off my desk if nothing else.
I will second that because I can see this will take a relief off of Mike and let him be free for again for a while to taking on the fire responsibilities of fire chief.
Are we still on discussion?
Yes, we also have not had public comment yet.
I would just as soon wait to approve the whole thing when the drug policy is complete. I'm sure we could find a corner of the bookcase to set it until...
No problem.
I'd rather just deal with this once.
Okay.
When it is completed. Otherwise, it might just fall into the crack and never be heard of again.
Don't have any cracks. We don't have any cracks.
Give us a chance to look at the changes that have been made here tonight.
I have no problem with that. I knew that you were all anxious to consider this document, and we worked like crazy to get it to you at this meeting.
I appreciate the diligent effort that went into that.
If the attorney could only find one mistake in it, I'm a happy man.
Well, actually, I found two, but they already had fixed the other one.
let's take public comment on it then at this time. Is there anyone who'd like to comment on this particular item? Okay, hearing none, we have a motion and a second on the floor.
We do?
Yes.
We made the motion.
Would the motion makers and second like to reconsider or like to have the item brought forward?
I'll reconsider my second. It makes sense to wait and get it all taken care of one time. So.
Yeah, that's my preference. Thank you.
Okay, given that, is it then the consensus that we'd like to wait 2 weeks?
Yes.
Okay. We'll consider the entire item then on the next agenda.
We won't have to go back through all these little corrections you made.
Unless something materializes, we won't even look at this particular document other than to have you be aware of it by reference. You should probably, I'm not going to make you another copy, so please bring it to the next meeting with you. And we'll just schedule the drug policy first, so it's adopted first, and then follow that immediately with the adoption of the...
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Many thanks.
While we are on fire items, I'd like to get an idea of if we could consider an item for emergency addition to the agenda. This would be the idea that several of our part-time people are coming up for addition in the PERS program. And I think that I expressed some, I think several of the members of the board were concerned with that when that first happened and we had our first occurrence. Now there, I understand there's three more people that have come under the PERS program. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a couple others that probably will come under that program soon. And I would hope that the management of the department would take a hard look at how people are being assigned and use all diligence to avoid assignments that run over the 1,000-hour threshold limit for that, because it significantly increases our costs with no additional benefit to the public. And if at this point I would entertain a motion that this is an emergency item that's come up. The warrants were only given to us yesterday, in some cases this morning, such that we haven't had, this is something that's come up since the agenda was published and is a new item that I believe we should address tonight.
So moved.
Is there a second? Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we consider this as an emergency addition to the agenda. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Hold on. Could you please speak a little bit more to why you wanted it now instead of on the next agenda?
Because the we have additional people that between now and then will probably be rolling into the PERS system if we don't give strong direction tonight to the staff to do otherwise.
All right. Thank you.
Is there public comment on this issue? Okay, hearing.
And the issue is adding the item to the agenda.
Adding the item to the agenda. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Okay, it's been added to the agenda that we consider giving strong direction to the senior management of the fire department to adjust the schedule such that we do not incur PERS liability to staff and absent some kind of dire emergency.
Well, before we just go out and give direction, maybe we can get some more information here and ask for what's going on and ask some clarification, and then with that information, then give our direction.
Okay, let's ask Mike if we have some reason that we have a number of people now who have come up over PERS and are apparently immediately in line to be there.
Well, I think the most glaring and obvious thing is that we're operating a department with two personnel on full time. We're staffing our station with two personnel, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have one vacancy in the full-time slots that we haven't filled and were instructed not to fill since early November of last year. So in order to maintain our staffing level, we've had to use reserves to fill that position. We have a limited number of reserves that can work or are willing to work. We have reserves, but some of them are not willing to participate in the program. So.
Question?
I'm
wondering, would we not be better off to pay overtime to some of the people that are in PERS already rather than increasing more employees becoming PERS recipients?
I would assume that would be an option, but since I'm not a financial expert or personnel expert on overtime issues, I don't know that that would be.
I think we have staff that could probably figure that out. Mm-hmm. Who does the scheduling?
It's done by Catherine Rodlin right now, and I approve it.
And I think we've given the fire department direction in the past not to eliminate overtime as much as possible. So, you know, so I mean, they're running with that direction as well.
Well,
so
if your management, or I would think that you're looking at the cost of the department, and if you're seeing that suddenly your PERS is way out of line, you would stop and say, well, maybe paying some overtime might be better. Or when we budgeted, we should have realized what was going to happen.
Well, I agree, but they can't go against what we've told them to do.
They could come and ask for guidance.
The total lack of any communication to the board on this subject I find very disturbing. And with respect to the four full-time officers that were originally hired, they were hired in response to a plan that was made up by people who should know better that turned out to be illegal. And I just have grave difficulty with a lot of these concepts. And it seems to me that things are going along under less than ideal control.
Can we ask staff, Arnie, or whoever's counting the beans in there on this, maybe, I don't know, whoever's doing the PERS thing, whatever, to sit down with the pen and the pencil and the calculator and figure out, are we better off paying overtime or are we better off increasing the number of employees that fall under PERS?
What you're better off in doing is getting a larger cadre of reserves. I mean, that's the real secret to the solution. What you have is a situation that for health and safety, you have to have a certain number of personnel on in this situation. And this has frankly been coming on for some time, and it's just now you haven't known it was a problem because it hasn't been identified as a problem because everything was working. We were staying at the budget levels and there was nobody joining PERS. But now all of these hours have jumped up, and it's sort of like the first drops of water over a flood wall. You don't see them at first, and then all of a sudden they start coming to your attention. What you really need to solve this is to get a larger cadre of people in the pool to work and train. You're not going to do that overnight, so you're going to have this problem. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I don't think it's cheaper to put people on overtime for a couple of reasons. One, you put people on overtime, you're paying time and a half and differential and all kinds of other things. Secondly, you're paying PERS on time and a half as opposed to straight time. And thirdly, you run into a situation when you start working people more hours than it's healthy to work them, that you have people that start having problems, whether they be health or whether they be accidents or whether they be less than efficient in their duties. I think really what you need to do is to sit down and make a plan in terms of how to expand the fire department. Now, I happen to, one of the things we happen to go through in this review of the fire manual that concerns me, and I finally agreed with myself that, you know, it's been going on and it's been working, but maybe it's not working as well as it should, and that is that your fire department recruitment is basically done by word of mouth and the good old boy system. And that's not really the way to run a fire operation. You really should go out and recruitment and advertise just like we did for a general manager. Maybe not as extensively, but you'd be surprised that if you really go at it in what I consider to be an appropriate human relations way, that you're probably going to get more people. Now, it won't be Ralph's cousin Vinny, but it will be people who may have an interest in starting out as being a firefighter in the hopes of eventually getting a full-time job, because that's what you really want to run through. And I think what you should do is direct Mike and I and Gina to put together a program like that, and direct Mike, if you wish, to take those people that are running close to that, and somehow or other he and I sit down and work out a schedule where we can keep that from occurring. But you actually, as a part of this process, holding out the one additional employee, and I understand these things are for budget measures, kind of put this issue into place, and not hiring more personnel at the very lowest level has created this problem.
Let's go back to the PERS a moment. Is 1,000 hours when PERS kicks in?
Yes, and it kicks in forever.
Okay. So those ones that have just become PERS, they've only worked 1,000 hours, then I would think that those would be the ones that we would maybe want to
work more. Right.
So I might even be paying them some overtime, but I'd rather don't want to have any more PERS if we can avoid it. And your suggestion of recruiting, I think that's terrific. I think that's great. I think that's something that needs to be looked at, but I would also appreciate looking at what I asked about.
Sure.
Yeah, I tend to agree very strongly with Barbara that that those people who are now on there irrevocably should be used to the maximum to prevent others crossing that threshold line and, again, irrevocably increasing our costs, again, with no further benefit to the public. What troubles me on several levels about this is that one had to very diligently read a staff report to see that this happened the very first time for the first individual. This time, there's not anything in any kind of a report or any kind of notice, but if you don't read the warrants real carefully, and you're not used to reading the warrants real carefully, this thing just completely slid under the radar screen. And that really bothers me, that there's a total lack of communication between staff and the board on an incident that's very important to the members of this community, and it disappoints me very severely that that has happened.
I'd like to say I didn't catch it in here, so, and I'm on the fire committee, and it has not been brought up in a fire committee. So I think this is something that is very important, and we do need to pay attention to it.
Go back to the PERS one more time.
Yeah.
Does that run from January through December or from July
fiscal
through
year?
It's fiscal year. Which we're getting ready to pass through.
So then, Joe Blow has got 980 hours, and then July 1, he's back to zero.
That's how I understand it, but we'll confirm that.
Yeah. Well, then I would hope that...
Are we correct in understanding that there's a couple of additional individuals that are very close to that at that time and may well run over that by the end of the fiscal year?
It's my understanding that that has, is something that's coming up.
Mm-hmm. So we should... It would be better for us to pay overtime to other employees rather than use them anymore, which would hold, run them over their purse.
For the rest of this month.
Keeping in mind that you can't order employees to do those kind of things under except under.
Your suggestion was that we give direction to the staff to review the schedules, always bearing safety and excessive overtime in mind. I don't like the idea of excessive overtime. I do understand that people, especially in a public safety position, can be tired. There's oftentimes emotions and so forth that run high, and I don't support routine overtime as a matter of policy. But I would like the staff. I'd like to support your proposal with the additional comment that I think it's important that we do take all reasonable steps to stop this from occurring before it goes over that limit.
To the extent that I wasn't aware of the strength of the board's position on this, you know, just one of those things that got through, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this has been coming for some time, and again, I don't think it was well communicated. Do we need would you like a motion or a sense of the board to be given? We've added it to the agenda so we can take a vote on it if that would be appropriate.
Surely.
All right.
Sure it's clear.
Okay, would you like to give us a shot at
a summary of it?
A summary of what we would be considering.
All right. I'll try it, and then we'll see where we can go. To direct staff to look at the current hours of all employees in the fire department, and to have the fire chief immediately reschedule employees who are coming up close to the 1,000 hours, to look at the possibility of using additional overtime of fire personnel who have already achieved the PERS level and or permanent fire personnel as a way of augmenting this, and bringing back a report to the board in a future meeting on how this should all work.
With due diligence to safe operation being the foremost concern.
I don't know if I left anything out.
Sounds pretty good. You did good. Is there public comment on this topic? Antonia.
Hello, all of you. Tony Maldonado, Oceano. I need to ask a question. How many do we have, a night crew and a day crew, or is it all the same ones, day and night? All the firemen.
The crews, if I could attempt to answer that, work 24 hours, is that right?
Yes.
So they work all night and...
And all day.
Yeah, 24-hour schedule.
Because if they have to be awake 24/7, you know, they can be very tired, very stressed and all that, and they will not be able, especially now with the summer coming along and the beach full of people, they have to respond over there. They have to respond to the community. So I think that we do have to have more people working for the fire department so that they can make two crews, a day crew and a night crew, because they deserve to rest. And, you know, the money is worth it, whatever we pay them, because they can save lives or save your home or whatever. And if they're tired or stressed out, I don't think they'd be able to, because they'll be overworked. This is my comment. Think about it.
We do
thank
provide, you.
You
might want to...
Yes, we have the firefighters are one of the professions where the people working a 24-hour shift are allowed to sleep while they're on that shift, with the idea that they would wake up and immediately respond to a fire call, just like you would if someone was knocking on your front door.
Yes.
So.
But if they're knocking on my door day and night, I don't think I'd be able to hear them once in a while. And that's where all this comes from.
We're very, very concerned and want to make sure the firefighters yes. and all the employees
yes,
get the
I'm
appropriate
Yes, I'm very concerned
rest.
About our community and our firemen also. Thank you.
Thank you, Antonio. Any other comment on this item? Okay, then I guess I would entertain a motion to support the general manager's restatement of the issue.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second the motion that Mr. Bookout made.
That already stated.
I'm going to have to go back and watch the television to make sure I got it all down.
Thanks again to EGP. Okay, may I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Okay, that concludes item 7. Moving to item 8A, cleaning and inspection of district sewer and water lines. This is a continual disclosure of the emergency declared by the Board of Directors concerning the cleaning and inspection of district sewer and water mains. This follows the San Simeon earthquake and has carried on for a long time, so I think we're all familiar with it. Is there any public comment on this item? Hearing none. Do we have a motion?
I move that we extend the emergency on the sewer and water mains.
Second.
On the tariff.
It's been moved and seconded. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. We've already covered item 8B. Brings us to item 8C, award of bid for the rehabilitation and testing of water well number 6, consideration of the general manager's recommendation to accept the bid of Lane Christensen in the amount of $179,134 for the rehabilitation and testing of water well number 6.
Yes, you have before you a copy of the results of the bid. There was a single bid received. The one bid received was from Lane Christian Company of Santa Maria in the amount of $179,134. The original engineer's estimate plus the contingency was about $170,000. The engineer's estimate was about $135,000, but with the $20-something-thousand-dollar contingency, it brought it up to the $179,000, or $170,000. This well is a very important and integral part of the district water supply system and needs to be repaired to ensure the provision of quality potable water. And your staff would recommend that the board consider the bid and authorize the bid to Lane Christensen and Company and authorize the execution of the agreement for services as contained in the original bid document. I would say that, you know, that we need to get this started as soon as possible because the heat months are coming, September and October, and we need to get this well online.
Question? When was the engineer's estimate given? Because usually we're a lot closer.
When was it given? It was given to you when the bid document was presented to you.
A couple months ago.
I would say probably that was about right.
Two or three months ago. It might have been prepared, though.
Yeah,
well,
I guess my question
that.
Is,
when was it prepared? I have no idea. I couldn't even begin to answer that.
Usually our engineer have been closer to...
I've worked with this engineer for many years, and... and with bids, I can guarantee you that you go up and down.
That's something we should consider.
Not only that, but we only have one bid. So if we had multiple bids, we might see them at different ranges within that.
Yeah. Not saying we shouldn't do it. I was just trying to get a piece of information.
Yeah, and I don't. I didn't invite Mr. Gehring here to explain the thing, but because that would be just pouring more money into the well. So,
all right.
It's not like we have a lot of choice, and we do need to get this done.
Right, and we did advertise that
widely as we normally do.
Green sheets and all that stuff, the normal process.
Mm-hmm.
That is a concern, that we're only getting one bid for a lot of our work, and I'm thinking, what are we doing wrong, or what's going on right now that causes this problem?
I think it's because our projects, in the scheme of things, are small.
Yes. If you sit down and actually, and I'm just totally amazed. I was telling, I can't remember, I think it may have been Director Dahl the other night, going through the County Board of Supervisors agenda and seeing the volumes of bids for the multi hundreds of thousands and millions of dollar projects. Now, I'm sure they're all worthy public projects. I'm not criticizing that. But what I think we're saying is that we're just a small pond, and you're not going to attract a whole lot of the big guys. And there's not, I don't know, perhaps Phil knows how many other well operating companies are around here. I know H.G. Wells has gone out of business, which used to always bid on every well project that anybody in any of the cities around here had. But I don't know how many other competing companies are in this local area now.
The 2% construction management, who gets that?
That would be Gehring and Taylor.
He gets that plus 4% engineering?
Right. So it may be that we're running up against the fact that there's just not a lot of companies doing well work in this area.
I'm trying to think. Over the grade, there are quite a few well companies, it seems like.
Oh, no.
Over the grade. Maybe they don't come south.
Phil, do you know of anybody else down here that does well work?
She's correct. There are several up in Templeton. Well, not several, two or three. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought Shirley would get a couple.
Yeah.
And this was able to get out too, though?
Yes. Yes, we bid it regionally. We would do it with any major construction.
Unfortunately, our problem is pretty well specialized. You know, not a lot of people have the same problem we're having right now.
Yeah. Anybody can drill a well. Not everybody can fix a well.
Well, with the amount of rain we got this year, I think we're going to need groundwater.
Yeah. I think we need to move ahead with this.
Is there public comment on this item, first of all? No public comment? Any other final questions or comment from the board?
We will need a roll call on this one.
We'll look then for a motion.
I move that we accept the bid of Lane Christensen in the amount of $179,134 for the rehabilitation and testing of water well number 6.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we accept this bid. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Brings us to item number 9, administrative items.
Mr. President, I'm going to recuse myself on this item as I've had a recent business transaction with someone who might be affected by this.
Okay, Vern, thank you. Item 9A then is a request for discussion regarding proposed mobile home park conversion ordinance. Hugh Gilson is here. May wish to discuss this.
Mr. President, Mr. urge the County Board of Supervisors to include meaningful protection for existing mobile home parks in the mobile home park conversion ordinance currently being formulated by county staff. Mobile home park conversion is a complicated issue, but the reasons for preserving rental mobile home parks are fairly basic. The extreme hardship that they entail for the homeowners, the mobile homeowners, in the case of a conversion, and the affordable housing crisis that's affecting this county right at this time. Any type of mobile home conversion causes inordinate hardship for the mobile homeowners affected. The draft ordinance put forward by county staff since the beginning of this process in October 2005 and the one they are still promoting is basically a set of instructions on how to convert mobile home parks. It details requirements for moving mobile home parks to mobile homes to other available spaces. That's assuming they're movable at all. There are no open spaces in this county, none whatsoever. They speak of alternative housing. There's already long waiting lists for all the affordable housing in this county. They talk of government assistance to convert parks to resident ownership. There is very, very little of this funding available if one qualified family in 20 would be able to acquire such assistance. It would be a lot. There just isn't the funding available. At this point in time, there is no county funding allocated to this problem at all. Speaking of resident conversion to resident ownership, generally, basically what it means is a windfall for the property, for the park owner, who realizes 2 to 3 times what he normally would in a sale to someone who would continue to operate the park as a rental park. And for the homeowners, it means double to triple the monthly expenses to live in the same home. What it all boils down to, because there are no available spaces, there is little of any alternative housing, there is little or any funding for resident ownership for most of the people who live in mobile home parks and don't have the money to buy their spaces. Arguing to try to reduce what is regarded as in-place value. And it amounts to banishment. And if the real estate values are high enough, even with buying out the mobile home owners at in-place value, the conversions are going to happen. Thousands of working people, elderly, the infirm, are just going to be run out of the county. You know, so county staff's own research found that projected profits of a conversion, even when homeowners are compensated at actual market prices, would be significantly more than needed to qualify for loans to do such a project. So this is a real possibility. This is not just a pie-in-the-sky assertion. These conversions will happen. Once the real estate starts heading back up, there'll be a ration. So now, the second thing that we have to consider here is the affordable housing crisis. So no protection for rental mobile home parks means the inevitable loss of irreplaceable affordable housing for San Luis Obispo County. Mobile homes are the primary source of affordable single-family detached housing in this county. There are many, many examples in the local media in the last couple of years that show what this housing shortage has already done to this county, the harm it's already done. If anybody wished to take the time, I'd be happy to detail any number of them for you. Both private and public sectors in this county are experiencing difficulty attracting and retaining people because of the shortage of affordable housing here. There's no question about that. Anyone who wants to learn what will happen if this problem is not effectively addressed, all you got to do is look south to Santa Barbara City. Because of a long-term refusal to address their affordable housing problems, are now facing real, serious difficulties maintaining their infrastructure. Just recently, the end of last year, they concluded a contract with their city police, which called for a 26.5% wage increase, because the police demanded that, so they Santa Barbara's more expensive than it is here. Everything. I used to live there. I know. Is that where we wish to go? The San Luis Obispo County Association of Mobile Manufactured Homeowners has been urging the Board of Supervisors to enact a mobile home park conversion ordinance with real protection for existing parks, such as are found in the Seal Beach, California, and the Santa Cruz County, California ordinances. I've included copies of those ordinances in your package. Besides that, we'd like to see a section included mandating one-for-one replacement of any affordable housing units lost because of any mobile home park conversion or closure within the same community, within a limited period of time. There has been some assertions that is legally questionable. There is a California code that mandates exactly that within the coastal zone, has been on the books for many years, and has withstood, I don't know if it's even been challenged, but I know it's been in effect for a long time. So it's perfectly legal. It's just a question of if they want to do it. Besides that, we further urge the placement of all existing mobile home parks into a separate land use category, that of manufactured home park residential. A separate land use category would further protect the mobile home parks and also enable the county to work on getting new mobile home parks built. Because with the projections in population increase and everything in this county, we're going to need more affordable housing, and manufactured housing has become pretty obviously the way to go for affordable housing. One other thing, there's a new factor emerging that may greatly affect how the county approaches mobile home park conversion. Assembly Bill 1542 and Senate Bill 900 both recently passed their respective floor votes and have moved to the opposite chamber for the next session of the state legislature. Now, barring a veto from the government, these laws will apparently be enacted later this year. These statutes repeal Government Code 66527.5, which it closed a loophole allowing park owners to convert a rental park to condo status and float the rent or and flout the rent control laws against the will of most of their tenants. The only question is are they willing to, politically willing to do it? Despite the intentions of the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission and the mandate from the state, the amount of affordable housing in this county, according to the most recent report a couple of months ago by the county itself, shows we have actually lost affordable housing during the past 3 years. We have less now than we did 3 years ago, even with everybody supporting it. So something needs to be done, because we don't want to end up where Santa Barbara is. We don't want to preside. We don't want to have a government, county government, presiding over an expulsion of thousands of people out of the county. To that end, we feel it is in the interest of Oceano specifically, and the county as a whole, that this board make your support for the preservation of mobile home rental parks known to the Board of Supervisors in whatever manner you might deem appropriate, as long as they got the message. Thank you. I'm at your disposal if you have any questions.
Okay, thank you, Hugh. Are there any questions for Hugh?
Well, I can speak to this issue because when I was running for office, I was talking to a lot of people that lived in mobile homes, and it was a very scary issue for people out there. People were thinking they were going to lose their homes, and that got me interested in what's going on here. So I've been involved in going to the meetings and listening to what's going on, but I really support Mr. Gilson and the manufactured homeowners and their positions. They're essentially three positions that you're speaking to. I know that many people haven't had a chance to look in their packet and review the information, and it might be best to have you come back next week, and we can ask you questions if we wanted to do that and maybe go forward from there.
If the board wished, I'd be happy to do so.
Mm-hmm. I feel this is an issue that still needs to be talked about more, but I side with you and your reasoning here. There's a lot of people who live in these mobile homes, and they're important to our community, and they are part of our community, and we appreciate them in our community, so we don't want to see them forced out of our community.
You still are a deliberative body with a certain amount of expertise in this area, this county. And in the same way that I've solicited the support from other groups, although frankly not as influential a group as you, in support, we feel that that a support from a local governing body such as yours would carry a fair amount of weight with the Board of Supervisors. We already feel we have a certain amount of support on the board, but we need to get meaningful protection for these mobile home parks. See, the problem is that this in-place value buyout has been put forward as protection to mobile home owners, and it is not. A 100-unit park like ours, you could buy everybody out at market prices and still make $15 to $30 million profit on the deal. So that's no kind of protection. There's the affordable housing crisis is to many people. I know most people like to consider the hardship involved in the poor old people and the handicapped and working people, and they certainly have a problem. But if this affordable housing crisis isn't addressed, none of our children will ever be able to buy homes in this area. None of them. It'd be like Santa Barbara. A little three-bedroom house costs $1,400,000. Can't live there.
On my behalf, I tend to support your position also. The mobile home residents here in the community are our friends, our neighbors, and as OCSD, you're our customers. And I tend to support that. Yet I'm sympathetic to Barbara's comment that the board has no legal jurisdiction for land use issues. That's one of our one of the things of overlapping jurisdictions that Tom spoke about earlier is where all of the land use issues, as you're well aware here, reside with the Board of Supervisors. But perhaps if it was the pleasure of the board,
how we provide the water to the parks if they were to be taken over and eliminated? Do we have
no? So long as the whoever's in control of that land meets all the regular land use requirements and pays the appropriate fees and does all the appropriate things, you've got to provide water. You are the water provider in this area. And speaking just very briefly to Director Mann's comment, from what I've heard so far, I tend to agree with her. I have a hard time seeing the direct connection to the district that puts this anywhere within your jurisdiction. You know, there may be some connection I haven't quite heard yet or been sensitive to that might make the good argument that you do have a vested interest in this as the board, but I haven't quite heard it yet.
See, I don't have a problem at all sending a letter, signing it, at a letter saying I support this and I'm, you know, a director of OCSD. I just had a problem of us doing it as OCSD in total.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And I think the Board of Supervisors knows all the five of us pretty well. They get five letters. Might even mean more than getting one letter.
They should get four letters, and that staff can certainly prepare one letter that says the same thing for the four of you.
Yeah.
And reflective of your position as an individual.
Microphone, sir?
Reflective of.
Mic should be on. Okay. Staff could certainly provide a letter for each of you individually that would basically say the same thing. I think it would be difficult for us to take a position on any of the elements within a proposed ordinance because that's not our purview or not our study. But you certainly do have a concern for the citizens of the community for their health and safety and their very existence, and I think we could put together a letter that says something more along those lines than it does as it relates to a planning issue.
would it be appropriate for us if such letters were generated, to sign them as director of OCSD? Usually if we make a personal statement to the board of directors, we need to specifically state that we're acting in our own personal capacity rather than as a director.
I think you could say something to this effect, that you're acting as in your individual capacity. Me up if I go the wrong direction on this, but it is our function as a board to deal with those things under which we have authorities and powers as a board. And that's why the board is having difficulty assuming a document that constitutes our position in an area in which we have no legal standing to move forward to it. Sure, we're concerned with our citizens, but the government has only given us the power to be concerned in certain areas. So we have to be very careful and walk a fine line. You know, it would be just lovely and ideal if we were a city and we could just take this whole thing and wrap our arms around it, but we're not. We're a special district, and we need to act like a special district.
But again, I think letters from the four of us, and I really don't even understand why Vern is disqualified, because we're not doing this as OCSD. I think those letters will certainly be looked at strongly by the gentleman in San Luis.
Well, if it is the will of the board that you're not able to act as a board on this issue, then individual letters would certainly be much appreciated. As I said, the situation as it stands is not acceptable and will do us all a great deal of harm, not just the mobile homeowners.
When Arnie said us walking the fine line, I think it was almost the same thing when we were 214 vote. Is that what it's called?
218.
The 218 vote
for the creek.
We really could not take a position on that, but you better believe everybody sitting here felt very strongly about that.
And was down at the Board of Supervisors making that point.
And we were there as individuals.
Some of the individuals may give more power than the group as a whole. So you may be better served.
Thank you. Is there anything else?
I have something to say, too. You might want to go back to the Oceano Advisory Council, because they do have power to recommend in planning situations.
That's
and strongly ask for a letter of support from that that group, because they do have that right to recommend in planning situations.
Yeah, they can send a letter.
Right.
And
Barbara's
I will try again. I had been there once before.
You're going to be on the agenda.
Thank you.
Next Monday night.
Thank you very much.
And how do we proceed with the letters for each of us?
I'll get them drafted.
Be right. But the community is really something a little different from the district.
True.
Mm-hmm. It really is in a technical legal sense.
That's a nice thing.
Right.
I was not aware of. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking to Mr. Dahl's issue, I'm not sure I completely understand what his particular conflict of interest was, but probably recusing himself was the right thing to do, because we only know with 20/20 hindsight that the board decided not to take action as a board.
Right.
But I believe that in his individual capacity, he would be able to participate in some sort of a lobbying campaign to the Board of Supervisors.
We'll give him that opportunity, and he can choose. We'll give him that opportunity, and he can choose to or not on his own volition.
Mm-hmm. And I'll go get it.
Okay. Thank you, Alex, for the good counsel. Yes. Is there any public comment on this item while we're waiting?
Yes.
It's still on the same item. Yeah, sorry, Greg.
Yeah, I'm the Nadaway Shadow, and I agree with the gentleman over here, because I have been through that. You know, you have to leave it to know what it is, to lose your home or your space where, you know, you have your place. And I was listening to the officer, as we all were here a while ago, of these mobile homes park here and park there and getting citations. This is the people that was over here in B Street, and they had to move all their trailers out of there to build homes there. Now they're building apartments there. Now these people doesn't have a place to park their trailers. because they're too old. They are not permitted in the other apartments or the other trailer courts. Okay, so they don't have no place. They don't have a house because they can't afford it. They don't have a space to play, to park their trailers, so they have to park wherever they can sleep during the night. And what do they get? Citations. This is not being human at all. We have to start looking for our community and stand by them. You know, later on it might be us that they try to kick us out of a house. Maybe you guys can afford another house. I can't. And then what are we going to be doing? We have to start thinking human and do for our community. I know you guys don't have the power, but maybe if we start getting petitions around the community to keep these people, old people, sick people, hardworking people in their space that they have. This is what they can afford. This is what they bought.
Do I presume that your group is looking to establish petitions?
Petitions. In the past, and of course, I don't know if you've seen any of the hearings before the planning.
Could you speak in the microphone, sir? We need to record this for posterity.
If you watched on the television the hearings from the Board of Supervisors hearings or the Planning Commission hearings, we have large turnouts, demonstrations. Right. There has been a great deal of cooperation among the mobile homeowning community in this entire county. The San Luis Obispo County Association of Manufactured Home Owners that I speak for on occasion is we have members from the far end of the North County all the way down to here and up into Napomo. Mm-hmm. It covers the entire county. This is going to be decided in the fall.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the point that Antonia brought up, that petitions throughout the community, not just of the mobile homeowners, can be an effective means of communicating with the Board of Supervisors.
Yes, sir. True. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Let's call Vern back. Go ahead, Antonia.
If you guys make the petition, I'll want you to put them on the stores, you know, and have them sign them for you. And then maybe we can bring them here and you guys can mail it or whatever you want to do with it.
I think it would be best for you to work with the gentleman over there.
Okay, mm-hmm.
Thank you. That concludes item 9A. Item 9B, I understand that the audit report has finally been received in the district office, but it was received so late that none of us has been able to get a copy yet, so we would like to remove this from the agenda. But I'm glad to see that at very long last this is...
Rather than remove it, what I would prefer you do is continue it to the next meeting. At the request of President Hill, I asked the auditor to be here with the audit or be here to explain why the audit was not being completed. In the bottom line thing, but there's some ups and downs and ins and outs that I'm not totally familiar with, and so I've asked him to be here. The problem is that he is not able to be here on the 27th because he's on vacation. So we can take a stab at it on the 27th or have him come at the next meeting after that, which is what I would prefer.
It's not going to
change anything. I also did have a discussion with him about the financial reports that we have to file with the state, and those may be ready as soon as tomorrow.
Okay.
And then we can go from there. We have the information we need to start to blend in with our budget, fund balances, and things of that nature. So we can deal with it without the presentation until the meeting, in first meeting in July, without any difficulty.
Okay, I definitely would like him to be here to discuss the audit, but I appreciate your suggestion that we continue that to the next meeting.
To the meeting of July the 11th is the first meeting in the next fiscal year.
Okay, with the consent of the board, we'll ask to continue that to July 11th. If I might ask one question, did we get the management letter with that transmittal this morning?
Not as yet.
Okay, so it's not complete in any event.
Well, the management letter is generally not presented except in a confidential way to the board. So we'll have to see what that says and then go from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Brings us to item 9C. Consideration of a travel policy. This is consideration of the general manager's recommendation to review and adopt the proposed travel policy.
Excuse me. I think you forgot public comment on the audit.
Okay.
I see the
we can
jumping up and down.
We can back up. I figured since we were going to continue that we let me allow public comment.
Oh, Shanna. Thank you, Barbara. I just want to remind the board that this happened last year with this auditor. I think the last couple of years, he was very slow. He was on the agenda, I think, at least twice. He didn't show up or had other things to do. I think his contract's up, and I would hope that we would get someone else that could work in a timely fashion. And
Freudian slip. Thank you. Okay, is there other public comment on the audit? Okay, hearing none, then we will consider item 9C, the travel policy. Arnie, would you like to tell us about that?
Yes, you have before you the proposed custom-discussed travel policy relating to the district in compliance with AB 1234, which became effective in January of this year. This particular document has been drafted and reviewed by Alex, and the first draft that I put through was not restrictive enough, so Alex and I fixed that and made it more restrictive to cover what we believe the intent of the legislation is. The policy will cover guidelines for travel and costs. It identifies the reasons that covered individuals, which are board members, advisors, and employees, can take travel. It establishes a process and standards of how travel is to be conducted, and establishes how reporting is to be handled after the travel is complete. The document also calls for three exhibits, which you have at your place. One is a document requesting travel authorization, which you fill out before you go. Now, keep in mind that this is only for travel over $200, that's when it comes into play. This second report, also required, is one that identifies the expense of the travel detail, including receipts and other things. And the government, I guess, thinks of everything, because we had to design a form that allows you to certify that you lost your receipts, which are required to be turned in. So that is there also. These forms include the application for travel, the travel substitute receipt, and the request for reimbursement. Your staff would recommend that this be adopted and become district policy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'd like to first start by thanking you for persevering with this in the face of the new Assembly Bill 1234 and getting all of the stuff that's in there to a cogent policy and forms that would facilitate compliance. It's not an easy task, so thank you for doing that.
I stole liberally from our two neighboring cities.
Mm-hmm. Vern, comment?
Well, it's always been the policy of this board to encourage and to make it as easy or as expedient as possible to get people the trainings to do that. And I hate to see anything that
that puts a stumbling block in that, because it's very critical, and it's especially critical with newly elected people, that they understand what this board is, how it works, our authorities, our what we can do, what we can't do, and that type of thing. And it saves us as a board as a whole a lot, and newly elected individuals a lot of times a lot of embarrassment. And I don't have so much of a problem with this per se, other than I'm just am cognizant of that that issue. And I would think that we should reemphasize that as much as possible, and constantly try to work toward making it as easy and as incentive-wise as possible to get people to trainings. I think it's a very critical function of the board. I mean, it's not going to affect me so much, because I've been to a lot of them already. And so, the number of ones that I go to are, being on the board for a while already is diminishing at this point in time, because I've had that training and I know how important it is.
And if I might comment, Director Dahl, staff is aware of that particular aspect of the concerns and has tried best to make this as painless as possible.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much more
still
externally
meet the law.
And externally imposed bureaucracy is what we're dealing with. And I'm very sensitive to Vern, your comments as well. Not only that, not only just the training, but also representation of the district's interests, like at the government days in Sacramento and things like that. There's training is certainly important. I agree with you, and we should want to facilitate that, but at the same time we have
and that we keep that in mind as the ultimate goal here.
Pamela, comment?
As the newest director who hasn't been to any of the CSD training, which I plan to start in October because of other things, I'm used to this. I've worked in a state government position for years and years. I've had to ask my supervisor if it is okay to go to training, and I've never been denied. I've always had a good reason, and I've never been denied the training that I needed, and I understand that the general manager will speak to those issues. So it's not something that's going to prohibit me from requesting this. I'm used to it. I've done this for years. And these are a heck of a lot simpler than what I have to do for the state of California.
Sure.
I sent Arnie my travel policy, and I said, if you would like to see this, it's about a zillion pages, and talk about seeing everything there. I don't think they have a substitute receipt, however, and that's one thing they missed, but they had everything else covered. So it's not something that's going to be a problem for me. I know that we need to comply, and we'll just go along with it and do what we have to do.
Well, I'm just more stubborn than the rest of you. I would like to see a couple test cases on this someplace, not just as soon as it be us that challenge them. It just irritates me. And I've been fortunate. I didn't have to work in governmental all my life. I worked for the public sector, and we had to account for things, but I mean, it wasn't departure, the date and the time. Oh, what time am I going to be going to Sacramento? 8 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the afternoon? Or what time am I going to arrive? I mean, we are not in kindergarten. I'm sorry. I just on principle, I'm just sorry.
I have some sympathy to that, too, although working for a large public utility company, when they tell me I need to go someplace, the first thing I have to do is fill out a travel authorization request. I decline to answer on the grounds it may tend to incriminate them.
I mean, we're going to go along, and we're going to be roll over and play dead. You two, one on each side of me, are always talking about so much government interference on things, and then you two are rolling over. I can't believe you.
I'm on a different page with you here. I agree with you on it. It's just that it's like so much other stuff that's mandated. I mean, we don't have much.
There is a minor amelioration in that, for example, going up to Templeton for the one-day training and that kind of thing, that usually costs well under $200, so this wouldn't be invoked.
It doesn't really change anything in terms of, like, if all the board members are going to go to a CSDA conference, staff can go ahead and make those reservations. You just have to... This actually is greater protection from criticism for you if it's complied with than it is onerous. And I can guarantee you there's no staff that's doing a job for you that won't help you fill out these forms. Okay. So I don't
and
think
we
it's
appreciate
going to be a major
that.
Problem.
Purpose of training. Oh, God. I mean, I have a whole drawer full of receipts I've saved for 50 years if anybody wants them.
I could use some of them.
I noticed one of the flaws in the bill is that if you drive somewhere, like driving to Sacramento, you get the mileage rate unless the mileage rate is under what an airfare rate, you know, the cheapest airfare rate is. And
then you have to rent a car.
Yeah, and then who's going to check that and who's going to do that? And then once you get there, you've got to rent a car, you've got to do all the other, you know, our taxi fees and the rest of that, which is going to then once again run it up over the what would have been the mileage if you took your own vehicle. And then you don't, and when you take your own vehicle, you get down there, and the driving around that you do down there, you don't necessarily get reimbursed for.
I'm going
to
be,
because you just have the trip to and from.
I'm going to be perfectly blunt for you. You asked the question, who's going to check this? And it would be some citizen who's mad at you about something else and wants to embarrass you. That's who will be checking it.
Yeah, and then it gets, you know, that airline don't get checked by staff, and then we end up with a reimbursement check for mileage for driving up there, and then somebody comes up later on with, well, this airline had this fee, you know, schedule at this point. And
this is a CYB form. Yeah. Cover your back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I can remember in the past when we've gone on trips, we've rented a vehicle, and three or four people have gone in that vehicle. But this would certainly encourage you for each one to say, oh, I drove my own car.
Right. I mean,
this is asking people to cheat.
At any rate, is there a comment from the public on this item? Okay, hearing none, then I'll bring it back to the board. Do we have further discussion or a motion?
You probably ought to have a roll call.
May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Director Green.
Yes. Vice President Bookout.
Yes.
Director Dahl.
Yes.
Director Mann.
No.
President Hill.
Yes.
You got no.
Well, I didn't. I knew it had to pass. I wasn't voting no. I'm the third person, so I had to do the yes.
I thank you folks for your honesty and your attitudes. And when I become a private citizen 6 weeks from now, I'll probably agree more with Barbara.
Well, again, I appreciate your work on that, because complying with reams of state regulation and distilling that down is not real pleasant.
I wish one of these days I'd run out of these things that need to get done. So.
But, you know, you're talking about, oh, the cheapest airline or this or that. I worked for the government for 6 months one time. Was all I could stand in the Carter administration. And I was going from Washington, D.C. to Denver, Colorado. But because you had to fly on whatever airline that they were subsidizing at that time, we went to New Mexico and then went someplace else and then went to Denver. It took a whole day to get there. It was ridiculous, but that was the rules. And that's why I just hate stuff like this.
Yeah.
And it's
frequent flyer miles are the same way. I went to Florida via Detroit 2 years ago.
Yeah.
One way to see the country.
From an airplane? I don't think so.
Well, that brings us to item number 9D, which we've previously discussed, and that
recommend
is
recommend continuation.
We want to continue that to the next meeting.
Do you need public comment on that? We did on the last one.
Is there public comment on continuing this item?
Gina would like you to look at her pretty picture. Oh, just me. I got a nice picture to remind myself it was in the agenda.
Very good. She figured you needed a picture after going through all the reams of state regulation there that had no pictures whatsoever.
And I really didn't appreciate what Pamela sent me, to be honest with you. It was quite something.
Okay, with that, we will continue item 9D to the next meeting. Brings us to attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting on June the 6th. That was the annual meeting to consider the budget for the 2007-2008 fiscal year. And we looked over the proposed budget items and tentatively agreed to what was in the budget. And the next meeting, there's actually going to be a special meeting, and I guess they called us to give us the date to confirm the date on that for approving that budget. So that was the meeting, the entire substance of the SLO CSD meeting. I also attended the personnel committee meeting with Barbara. I'll let her discuss that. And move on to Vice President Bookout.
The main thing I have to report is the manual, which we covered pretty much earlier tonight in our, but that was our fire committee meeting for our fire department. I'm not exactly sure what our number of calls are. I know our fire engine ran a few more times today. So, Mike, what are our calls up to this year so far?
375,
which is a little bit above last year. I think we were about 40 calls lower last year this time, approximately.
Okay. Vern?
Well, I had a meeting with one of the supervisors that was part of the request from the board to visit them on the Dunes Park out there, and the rest of the meetings will be this coming Wednesday.
It's the 27th. It's two weeks from today.
2 weeks from today. Okay.
Yes, we have meetings from 10:30. That's changed, Director Dean. 10:30. I'll send you a letter. 10:30, 1:30, and 2:30, I believe, is what it is. So it's but fortunately, it's all on the same day. So,
can we carpool and you fill out the request?
Only if the board approves it.
Yeah. I want to know how much do I get.
We're not going to have a meeting in between now and then to approve it all.
How much do I get from going from here to Grover?
It's got to be a minimum of $200 so you can use the form.
48.5 cents.
Very, very nice, very aware, very wise supervisor got there. He very much was aware of the impact that the state has on the local community. Anything that is going to happen with this beach in regards to the state will address local issues as far as he's concerned, and of course this is a closed session item that they're dealing with, so there's not much that they can say or talk to anybody about. So most of it was just us talking with me, letting him know of our concerns and our desires.
He was totally in agreement with everything we said and committed to nothing.
Yeah, so he's a good politician then, too. but it was a nice meeting.
Good, thank you. Pamela?
I have nothing to report. I was ill last week, so I missed a couple of good meetings.
Okay. Barbara?
I attended the personnel committee in Pamela's absence, where we dealt with how the interviews and the selection of the general manager were going to go. the logistics of it. That was basically it. On personnel committee, fire committee went to that with Director Bookout, and he asked me, he's not available on June 15th to go over to Grover Beach. Well, I think that's where we're going, where you'll get my mileage from. asked me to go over there to sit in on the meeting, and they're going to be bringing us up to date on some of the things that they want to be doing, Aurora, Grover, and Oceano together, and talking about the presentation of the reserve firefighter program and how they want to share training and all of that. He would be allowed to
go. She's available. I have no objection for her going.
And she can do her own card, so she can have mileage also.
Yes, and unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to attend it, so I won't be getting any mileage.
Oh, darn.
You can still fill out the form.
Yeah. And that's all I have.
Okay, comment or questions from board members?
Did you bring with you, or do you have at the top of your head, what the major purchases are going to be this year at the sanitation department?
I did not bring it with me. My apologies. I'll bring that, and it can be distributed to all the board members. They did a good presentation with photos showing what was going on. One other thing that I asked about while I was there was the fixed film reactor, which, if you'll recall, is the thing that spins around and had a bearing that was getting water in it, and they thought the bearing would be failing. And it looks like that is not quite as bad when they investigated it as originally thought. So they're expecting that'll continue on until they can do a scheduled maintenance outage of it rather than some emergency addressing. But they do have a number of major budget items, of course, and capital improvements and things of that nature, and I will bring that in. Other board or member comments, questions? Comments or questions on the reports from the public? Okay. Hearing none brings us to item 11, general manager items for discussion.
None.
Item 12, board member items for discussion. Start with Vern.
I don't have anything at this time at all.
Nothing.
Pamela.
Nothing.
I don't have any other than we might be looking for some new reserves for the fire department.
That's, something that I hope that staff would, again, look into at the earliest convenience. I have nothing other than off that topic. Item number 13, consideration.
Missed a couple public comments, maybe.
Is there public comment on board items?
Public comment on no comments.
Public comment on no comments. Item 13, consent and recused.
One
recused. Passes 4-0 with one recused.
Move that we pay the remaining warrants.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to pay all the remaining warrants. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Item number 14, is there any general public comment at this time? Hearing none. Item 15, any written communications?
Yes, we actually do have a written communication. Supervisor Ashajan has sent in a letter asking for a representative to come to a meeting at the Coastal Commission on July the 11th at 9 a.m., and it's basically a welcoming meeting of the Coastal Commission upon which he serves as our representative. They're going to have the official welcome that morning, and he would like to have someone representing each of the agencies in the coastal jurisdictions there. And there can be more than one.
I'll go.
Okay, Director Dahl has expressed an interest, and also Director Mann.
It's perfectly okay.
Mm-hmm. So, if that's agreeable to the board, I would ask,
good for me.
Ask them to attend on our behalf.
As a representative.
Embassy Suites. Yes.
In San Luis?
In San Luis.
You're going to have mileage.
Oh, don't worry. Don't you worry.
Would suggest carpooling.
No, I don't carpool. I'm sorry.
Any other written communication?
Anyway, with that direction, I'll respond that the two of you will be there for the board.
Now, will we have to cover their breakfast?
That's up to their individual conscience.
Okay. Oh. What color receipt you want?
Public comment on the written communication. Okay. With that, it looks like we're adjourned.
I used to keep drawers of receipts for my reporter.